You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Thursday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. And we'll talk some football, including Tom Brady versus that Rams defense, Chargers and Chiefs, Packers and the Niners. Are there some teams that don't appear to be good that are actually good, and quarterbacks who may not look like they're playing well, but they actually are? We'll have the numbers to back that up. Also, College Football Playoff Committee did not vote on expanding the playoffs from 4 to 12. We'll talk to Pat Forty about that. And your phone call is always welcome, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DPShow. Tom Brady is again bracing his new role as a content creation machine. This time, it's a podcast called Let's Go Podcast. He's calling today's NFL soft, and one of the few current players who can say that back in my day and actually mean it. It was 20 years ago today that Tom Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe in New England. Here is Tom Brady on his podcast with Jim Gray and Larry Fitzgerald.
There's a lot of plays and hits that are happening on quarterbacks now that are flags for defensive players that probably weren't that way 10 or 15 years ago. So I'd say the game is a little softer than it used to be. You know, I think the defensive players are more on the defensive when they go into tackle. And I think that's probably adding to this element of quarterbacks outside the pocket and taking more chances, you know, than they did in the past.
Because Brady is an exception to the rule. He plays pretty much like he always has for the last 20 plus years. And one of the hardest things in football is to compare eras. Brady's numbers look a lot different than Joe Montana or John Elway. Patrick Mahomes is going to have bigger numbers than Brady because he'll be able to take advantage of the rules for an entire career. But who knows? Brady is an exception. He might rack up enough numbers late in his career to stay ahead of everyone. And if he wants to play till he's 50, then he's certainly going to do that. It certainly seems like no matter how they call the game, Brady is still coming out on top. McLovin, what's the poll question?
Most impactful injury in modern era NFL. Drew Bledsoe's number one, but not far behind. Joe Theismann breaking his leg, number two.
Yeah, but what did that pave the way for?
Well, it's the left tackle. It changed the way people. Joe Gibbs brought in an extra blocker. Like, everyone's like, you can't let the blind side go. That's what the movie Blind Side started with.
Yeah, but he didn't get hurt on a blind side.
He stepped up
in the pocket. And
well, Lawrence Taylor came around on his backside. Yeah. That's what they say. I think he did step up. So it wasn't like a classic blind side sack. But
didn't they have Joe Jacoby already? Joe Jacoby was one of the first left tackles that I remember was brought in to block Lawrence Taylor.
I think it might have happened because of that. I mean, maybe they got Jacoby help too.
Oh, yeah. They would always have like Clint Didier.
Right.
Like they'd have the tight end who would chip, but they would always stay on the left side because of Lawrence Taylor.
I think that started because Lawrence Taylor almost killed Joe Theismann.
Yeah,
that
but
Gibbs pulled in the tight end.
I don't remember that being a blind side, like, you know, coming around the back and Joe didn't see him. I'm not sure, but I don't need to watch it again. Jay Schrader, I think, came in for Joe.
It set up the Jay Schrader era.
Well, it set up the Mark Rippon era, that's for sure. All right, are we going to stay with that poll question?
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you, too, which backup do you think will have the best week? If I gave you, like, Jacoby Brissett, Davis Mills, Justin Fields, maybe Jacob Eason if Carson Wentz can't go. Is there anybody who's set up for particular success this week?
I guess I would say Justin Fields because I have more confidence in a first-round drafted quarterback, even though he's playing with the Bears. I like how people think that, hey, put in Justin Fields. The Bears aren't good. And we look at the Jags and the Jets and we go, why do they? You can't have those rookies out there. We have no problem putting Justin Fields in there. I do, but I don't know. Are you going to put Nick Foles out there? Yes, McLovin.
I thought you might say Jacoby Brissett just because he's got some experience that he might be okay in Miami.
Yeah, he's sort of a Teddy Bridgewater type quarterback, feels like. And he came in and had some decent numbers, I think, in that loss to Buffalo. All right, let me get to Steve Palazzolo. Once we figured out how to pronounce his name, we'd love to have him on. Co-host of Pro Football Focus NFL podcast. Do you want to jump in on any of those topics we've already had?
Well, I mean, the Brady Bledsoe thing, I mean, clearly that's the most impactful injury. I think the blind side's overrated because when the quarterback looks to his left, his blind side's protected by the right tackle. So I think it's overrated. And then Brissett should have some success this weekend because the Miami's got some good playmakers, but their offensive line is rough. So I would go Justin Fields there.
And once again, what you offer, what Pro Football Focus offers is not opinions. It's all numbers based.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. I mean, there's interpretation. Anytime you get a number, there's interpretation, there's context. But yeah, quantified film study is what we do. That's how we come up with our grades.
All right. Tom Brady versus the Rams defense. You have two of the top five defenders in the game, I'm guessing. Maybe the best at their individual positions, and Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. How does Tom Brady and the Buccaneers attack the Rams this weekend?
It's a tough one. I mean, it's going to look a lot different than what the Bucs faced the first 2 weeks against the Cowboys and the Falcons. The Rams defense, my big question coming in was they lose Brandon Staley, who was really forward thinking and taking away the deep ball and playing the pass before the run and all these different things that he did last year. And they're carrying that over. Jalen Ramsey's playing. Remember late career Charles Woodson when he was out there kind of playing a little linebacker and in the slot. I mean, that's how Jalen Ramsey's playing in and around the line of scrimmage, blowing things up. So the Bucs have to spread them out, be patient in the underneath game, but the Rams match up really well. And they gave the Bucs trouble last year on Monday Night Football. That was one of the few games where the Bucs offense was not very good. So it's a great matchup. Antonio Brown might be out, but the Bucs look like right now when all those guys are out there, all those receivers and Gronk and Cameron Brate, those tight ends, really tough to cover because Brady just goes, who's the open man this week? So I think it'll be a good bat. The Rams will do the best job against the Bucs offense. The Bucs will still find a way to score some points though.
More likely to happen, Ramsey gets an interception from Brady or Aaron Donald sacks Brady?
Oh, definitely go Aaron Donald sack. I mean, he wins, you know, about 20-25% of his pass rushes, which is incredible for an interior defensive lineman. You know, most guys are 10, 12, you know, maybe 15. So Donald he's got a much better shot, I think, of getting a sack. And Brady's smart. He doesn't have to throw at Jalen Ramsey. He can avoid him if needed.
Chargers and the Chiefs. I've mentioned this a couple of times. It feels like if you're going to beat the Chiefs, at least in the AFC, got to be able to run the football. Baltimore can run it. Cleveland can run it. Who else am I leaving? The Titans can run it. Can the Chargers run it? Is that the approach to beat the Chiefs if you were the Chargers?
I think it depends on the type of team you have. I think if you are the Ravens or the Browns and that is one of your strengths, that's a piece. I think what the Chargers have showed is they could put the ball in Justin Herbert's hands and they haven't scored a ton of points, but he's been pretty efficient. Couple mistakes against the Cowboys, but he's really good in that Washington game in week one, had all those third down conversions. I think you have to score points against the Chiefs. That's the key. What the Browns did in week one is they maximized every opportunity, fourth and three, and instead of kicking a field goal, they're going for it. You have to say, I have to score 30 and then hope that we can keep them to under 30. And, you know, the Ravens pretty much did that, right? So I think you got to score as many points as possible. And from the Chargers standpoint, that's Justin Herbert throwing to Keenan Allen, throwing to Mike Williams, and then figuring out how Austin Eckler is a part of the run game and catching the ball out of the backfield.
Have you graded out Justin Herbert and Matthew Stafford the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, Stafford's one of our highest graded quarterbacks. Herbert, you know, he's 11th right now in our grades, was Stafford's third. So Stafford has been a little bit better than his career baseline and probably shown, hey, look, this Rams offense is a nice little mesh with his skill set, and they've tapped into the downfield passing attack a little bit more with the Rams.
What's the grade for Jimmy Garoppolo so far?
He's one of those guys. One of my favorite things to do is to take PFF passing grade and compare it to, say, passer rating or yards per attempt, your traditional stats. And Garoppolo is, let's see where he ranks. He's down there. Oh, gosh, where is he? He's too low. 24th. He's 24th in our grades. Passer rating, he's top 10. So when you see guys that are lower in our numbers, higher in passer rating or traditional stats, you generally attribute that to luck or Kyle Shanahan being great, the playmakers being great, Debo Samuel catching a jump ball and running 70 yards for a touchdown. So that's been the Garoppolo story. He missed a lot of throws in that Eagles game and was one of the reasons why they only scored 17 points, even though they won.
But what are you factoring in that the QBR is not factoring in?
So we're looking at the quality of every single throw. So again, if Garoppolo throws a jump ball and it legitimately should be tipped away or whatever it is, and the receiver wins at the catch point, and then especially if the receiver wins at the catch point and then runs another 50 yards for a touchdown, that's a whole bunch of credit that's going to the quarterback that he didn't really earn. Mahomes is really a good example on Sunday Night Football. He had two touchdowns where it was Travis Kelce running through the entire Ravens defense. It was a decent throw. He threw it to him, but this is Kelce as he's running, earning him passer rating points and stuff, right? And Byron Pringle did the same thing on a 40-yard run. So the other piece is if you make a bad throw, throw it right to a defender, we're giving you a big downgrade, even if the defender drops it and it's only 0 for 1. So it's just adding the context to each play and the QB's actual contribution.
Steve Palazzolo, he's the co-host of Pro Football Focus NFL podcast. Did the media overreact to the first week with Aaron Rodgers, or did they overreact more so to the second week performance against the Lions?
Probably to the first week. I mean, Rodgers has had games like that before. They just didn't happen to happen in week one, right? It happened last year in week six against the Bucs. It happened at other times. Every time he had a PFF grade under 50 since 2016, which he had in week one, it was terrible. And under 50 is pretty bad in our system. Every time he's bounced back with four touchdowns, exactly four touchdowns and no interceptions. This is the fourth straight time he's done it now. So people could have looked at history and said, look, Aaron Rodgers has had bad games before. This happened to be in week one. It doesn't mean that Jeopardy did it. And he'll probably bounce back. He's facing the Lions. And it was four touchdowns and no interceptions, and he played better. So I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be okay. So relax again.
I think we're going to learn more about the Packers and Aaron Rodgers this week than we did last week. You're playing at home against the Lions. So I was not surprised. I was surprised the Lions were going toe-to-toe with them in the first half. I thought there was a huge third down toss to Devontae Adams in the third quarter that it kind of propelled the Packers there. But I'm not surprised at all. Let's look at rookie quarterbacks. Is anybody actually having a better season than we think with these rookie quarterbacks aside from Mac Jones?
Not really. I mean, I had high expectations, not astronomical expectations for Trevor Lawrence, but he's been disappointing so far. He's got the highest percentage of uncatchable passes in the NFL this year by a pretty significant margin. He's not playing with great timing.
What's uncatchable?
Just straight up an overthrow, an underthrow in front, behind. The receiver doesn't have a chance to haul it in. Okay. There's bang bang catches or opportunities, but he's just flat missing far more than he should be. And then Zach Wilson, all those interceptions against the Patriots, not all his fault, but his mechanics are all over the place. He's fading away. He's not stepping into throws. Things he probably got away with in college, he's learning he can't. So that hasn't been great so far. And Mac Jones has been the most efficient. He's been probably the safest as far as game plan goes and throwing the underneath stuff. But his week one game against the Dolphins was really impressive. Plays under pressure, his accuracy. So yeah, Mac Jones, I think, has been the clear guy. He hasn't dominated, but not making as many mistakes as the other guys.
Now you have Justin Fields coming in for the Bears. Assess the Bears' offensive line. Where does that rank talent-wise?
The tackles are playing okay right now. As far as pass protection goes, they've got Jason Peters at left tackle. He's almost 40, but he's still pretty good. Jermaine Ifedi's been okay as a pass blocker at right tackle. Historically, he's not great there. The interior's gotten beat up, so there's going to be some pressure up front. And the quarterback affects pressure rate because when a QB holds the ball, it puts more pressure on the offensive line, even if he's juking out of a sack. So that's what's going to be interesting to see. Andy Dalton generally gets rid of the ball faster than most quarterbacks in the NFL. He's top five getting rid of it. Justin Fields so far preseason and last week likes to hold it, let things develop, scramble out a little bit. So there'll be a lot of pressure on an offensive line that's definitely in the bottom 8 or 10, I think, in the NFL right now.
Do you guys grade careers? You do.
Yeah.
Is Devin Hester a Hall of Famer?
Now that's a tricky one because special teams, it's its own animal. I do think, when you're looking at the Hall of Fame, if you've completely changed the game, and Cordarrelle Patterson's going to have an interesting argument that's Hester-like, right? I mean, those guys were game changers. You're afraid to kick them the ball. I think Hester is. I think Patterson probably is because they were so good at taking it to the house, which is a very rare thing.
Wait, you think Cordarrelle Patterson is a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, he's the best kickoff returner of all time. In a time when that part of the game is getting de-emphasized, kickers can just kick it through the end zone and get a touchback if they want, and Patterson's still extremely dangerous. I mean, the Bucs were dribbling it at him last week because they were so afraid of him.
He was an All-Pro four times. Philip Rivers, Hall of Famer?
The more I think about it, I'm starting to lean no on both Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning, you know, just because I think the era thing matters. You were mentioning an era, right? How do you compare? Was Phillip Rivers a top five quarterback in his era? Yeah, a couple seasons he was, but overall he's top eight type of guy. You're in the era with Brady, Breeze, Peyton, with Aaron Rodgers, with Russell Wilson, Big Ben. It is tough to say this guy is an elite player in his era. So I'm starting to lean the playoffs are going to work against Rivers in this argument, even though the stats and generally he was really good. But I'm starting to lean no, I think, for Rivers.
Why no for Eli?
I mean, he was an average, slightly above average NFL quarterback. I say that with a ton of respect. That's a tough thing to do. Who had the two Super Bowl runs? I think he'll get in. I think people are going to buy into that. But they also didn't make the playoffs a lot. And it was in years where Eli was a bottom third quarterback, right? So there wasn't the continued sustained success where he was a top eight guy consistently. He had a couple quick peaks. And there were nice peaks. The Giants will take it, but I just don't know if you put that in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but I go back to Joe Namath. Joe Namath won one game, and you can say it might be the most important game in NFL history because it helped spring the merger. But he threw more interceptions than touchdowns. He had one unbelievable moment, but, you know, his defense was brilliant that day. They gave up 7 points to the Colts in Super Bowl III. Why is Joe Namath in the Hall of Fame?
It's because people like the feels, right? It's the feeling. And it's a tough for someone like me that works with numbers so much because I want to say, okay, here's the whole body of work. But I get it. The Hall of Fame is about moments and, you know, playoff success and, you know, helmet catches and things like that that Eli has. And look, the Mario Manningham cover two shot against the Patriots in 2011 is one of the best throws in NFL history. Forget the helmet thing. That was kind of a jump ball. I mean, putting the ball in Manningham's hands wins the game for the Giants. So I could talk myself into it, but I generally lean toward the full body of work. Am I watching a Hall of Famer? I don't know if anybody got that vibe when watching Eli Manning.
Always great to talk to you, Steve. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Steve Palazzolo, he makes us smarter, co-host of Pro Football Focus NFL podcast. And every time I say this, I get Jets fans who get upset or NFL fans. What do you have against Joe Namath? Nothing. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met, not just athletes, one of the nicest people I've ever met. And I even thanked him for being somebody I thought he was. And I said, thank you for being who I thought you were. I said that to him when I met him. But he wasn't better than Len Dawson, in my opinion. It's just Joe played in New York. Joe was Broadway Joe. Joe guaranteed the win against the Colts. That was the moment. Now, did he have as passing goes an effortless motion that I've never seen? No. He had the best throwing motion. It was so quick. And he used to be a great athlete at Alabama and had all those knee surgeries. But there was something about the story with Joe Namath. He presented himself as a star. But his numbers are not Hall of Fame worthy. Yeah, Paul.
This Cordarrelle Patterson thing that Steve Palazzolo brought up is interesting. Cordarrelle Patterson is by far the best kick returner of all time. He's got 8 kickoff returns for touchdowns in an era where you can't return it that much, and he averaged 30 yards a kick for his career. Devin Hester was only 25 yards a kick for his career on kickoffs. Cordarrelle Patterson never returned punts. Hester returned a lot of punts and led the league a bunch of times. Patterson was a 4-time All-Pro, Hester a 3-time All-Pro.
And those numbers won't be broken because they don't kick off anymore where you're able to return them. Yeah, McLovin.
Yeah, Paul and I were arguing. I think it's crazy to say that Patterson's more of a Hall of Famer than Hester. I mean, Hester's a legit Hall of Fame candidate. I don't think Patterson has a prayer.
All right. Well,
he's got 8 return touchdowns. I think Hester has 19.
I think Devin Hester is a Hall of Famer. But I'm far more lenient with this than the Hall of Fame voters. We'll take a break. We'll talk about the college football playoff committee deciding, not now, we're not expanding to 12, and an update on the USC job, all of that coming up, 20 after the hour, Dan Patrick Show. Great start to the NFL season, only getting better at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. DraftKings, putting new customers in the center of all the action. Get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Get in the action now. It's simple. You pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and then see how your team stacks up against the competition. And you can start tonight with tonight's game between the Panthers and the Texans. DraftKings, safe, secure, reliable. And the best part, you can deposit or withdraw your cash whenever you want. First thing you have to do to get started, download the DraftKings app now. Use the promo code Patrick. And this week, new customers can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Enter code Patrick, get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with your first deposit. That's code Patrick, only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Get in on the action starting tonight. Download the DraftKings app now. Pick your lineup, standard, the salary cap. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Head to the DP Show store and celebrate Paulie's birthday. Two t-shirts, $49. Check out the limited edition tailgate package. Collaboration with our new clothing partner, Sportique. High quality items, super comfortable, plus a flask and a handwritten note from me. But we're running out of these bundles for you to buy. DanPatrick.com. And Paulie has a birthday request. Yes, Paulie.
Dan, it's okay if you do nothing whatsoever for my birthday. I'd actually prefer it. But in the past couple of years, you have been generous enough to buy me a cake. And if a cake is here, I only have room, which I don't want. I do want Fritzy to cut it for everybody.
Okay.
That made my birthday 2 years ago.
Okay.
When he cut the cake without removing it from the box and just destroyed it.
Yeah, Todd.
You going to be able to eat like mashed potato cake? Is that something? Is it worth that visual tonight? You guys are not going to be able to even like eat it. It's just going to be crumbled little pieces of nothing.
Yeah, it's a mess. Yeah, we said, Tom, take it out of the box. It's easier to cut.
You're going to have to like gather the little pieces like a snowball and kind of put it together and make something out of it. A
couple of phone calls, then we'll check in with Pat 40. Dale in Kentucky joins us on the program. Good morning, Dale. What is on your mind today?
Dan, I have a confession to make. I need to say to you, I have a side hustle where I mow yards. For the last 8 years, I've listened to your podcast every afternoon when I mow, and this year I decided to branch out. I tried it for a couple of weeks. I felt guilty, so I've come back, but I need to get your forgiveness for this this sin.
You're forgiven. But, Dale,
thank
don't
you
do
so
it
much.
Again. Do not no. do it again.
Not a problem. And hey, tell Fritzy if he cuts the cake, dental floss, not used dental floss, new dental floss is the best way to cut a cake.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dale. I appreciate that. Very nice on Dale's part. Dave in Pennsylvania. Hi, Dave.
Hey, DP. What up?
How are you?
Hey, great. Thanks. Hey, I was listening to your Golden Boy Eastern Kentucky story, and it reminded me that there was definitely one team that wanted you. Back in the late 90s, I was captain of the Washington Generals against the Harlem Globetrotters on a world tour. And I was looking at the calendar, the schedule, and I saw that one night on a Friday, we were playing in the mall in Hartford. And I asked our people to try and get in touch with your people to see if you might suit up with us one night only, to see if we could get that Golden Boy silky smooth jumper on the opposite wing from me and maybe finally get a win. So I don't know if you never got the message, Dan, or did you big time us on that particular night?
Well, being a loser myself, I couldn't big time fellow losers like you guys. So, no, I would never do that. Look, I didn't care if we won or not. I just wanted a chance to shoot. So I would play for a team that had no chance of winning.
Just wanted buckets.
Yeah. I'm Danny Buckets, man. That's all I cared about. Not too good for the Washington Generals who lose every game. I just, give me, I want my touches, man. Give me my touches. All right, more phone calls coming up. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com. Pat 40, Sports Illustrated senior writer. He's going to the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game on Saturday. He was at Cincinnati, Indiana last week. Figured we'd have him on, get an update, because the College Football Playoff Committee met yesterday but did not vote to expand to 12 teams. Pat joins us now. Can you tell me why they didn't vote?
Pettiness, jealousy, rivalry, distrust.
short-sightedness. I guess that would be the short list of reasons. Basically, it comes down to a unwillingness to, I think, let the SEC and ESPN get everything at once here more than anything else. It's like, okay, Greg Sankey was on this committee that helped come up with expanding the playoff to 12. It would be a huge financial gain. ESPN would be the benefactor, the sole media benefactor, and we don't like what happened with expansion with Texas and Oklahoma, so we're going to throw a stick into the wheels here and at least slow it down. I still think we will get to expansion. I don't know that it's going to be 8. I don't know that it's going to be 12. But we're going to get to expansion with multiple broadcast partners is my belief.
But we still have to wait a few years for this contract to expire.
Right. Yeah. Now, you know, I mean, they could get into this probably and open this up and do something by like 2024 if everyone wanted to. But this is part of the slowdown process is we are not going to do this the way certain people want it. We're gonna, like, if you are the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC, you're saying, okay, well, this is not just going to be everything the way the SEC wants it.
You brought up the number 8. I was told, don't be locked into 12 because it might start with baby steps to 8 and might even jump to 16 and might blow right past 12. What are you hearing about down the road?
Well, I certainly think all the numbers are still on the table. You know, I think 16 is a tough sell right now from what I heard, just from people coming out of there worried about number of games played and how deep into January you're going to go with this thing. That there is a feeling that it would be a rare thing for a team to play 17 games. It could happen, but if you're at 16, a 16-team playoff, then it's almost certain that somebody's going to play 17 games. Whereas it would be unlikely otherwise. They want to keep this thing at 16 or fewer games for the most part, as they're trying to sell this as relative amateur sports.
Which segues into name, image, and likeness. Here we are a couple of weeks into the season. Is name, image, and likeness working?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's working quite well. You know, I mean, I know this. For all the people that sat out there and said, this is going to ruin the sport, you know, this is going to turn into pro football. I already watched pro football. I'm not going to watch. The ratings are huge. The ratings have been phenomenal so far this year. Players are getting things, but have you seen any sign that it has ruined their product, ruined their work ethic, turned them into, you know, lazy, money-grubbing players? No, I haven't seen that. You've seen non-revenue sport athletes make money off of it. I don't think that there has been anything that I've seen that says this was a bad idea.
I mentioned this in the first hour of the show that, you know, James Franklin beating Auburn at home sort of keeps him at the top of the USC list. There's obviously mutual interest, but he's either going to get a huge pay raise at Penn State or he's going to get a huge pay raise going to USC. And then I was also told, make no mistake about it, every coach wants to be mentioned for this job. Whether they want it or not, they want to get a pay rate. Like, their agents love this. Like, privately, the coaches are like, did I get mentioned? Yes, you did. Awesome. Now go to the press conference and act like you have no interest in going to USC. What do you think? How do you think this plays out?
Well, you're 100% right about that. And that's one thing USC did do by doing this at this point in the year. You just gave 2 months of leverage to the agents for these guys. And so, you know, they're going to do their work behind the scenes. If they want to get, you know, in front of Chris Peterson or Bob Stoops, who's not coaching right now, they can. But everybody else has got to play coy. As you said, be interested while acting like they're not interested. James Franklin and Luke Fickell, I think, are sitting in good positions here. You know, I think Franklin would fit very well at USC. Fickell would be a little bit tougher fit, and he also worked with Mike Bone at Cincinnati, and I'm not sure he is super anxious to work with Mike Bone again. I'm not saying they had a bad relationship, but I'm not sure they had a great relationship.
Yeah, I was told he didn't want to leave the Midwest. Now, that could mean a lot of different things, but I was told Fickell didn't want to leave the Midwest.
He's a Midwest guy through and through. I mean, that has been him. He's pretty happy at Cincinnati, and now Cincinnati has, you know, putative Power 5 membership coming with the Big 12, if the Big 12 can kind of hold on to that status. I just don't think he's the kind of guy that ever in his professional life thought, gosh, it would be great to coach at USC, whereas a lot of other guys, I'm sure, thought that.
He's Pat Forte, Sports Illustrated senior writer. He'll be at the Wisconsin-Notre Dame game. Game is bigger for who, Notre Dame or Wisconsin?
Well, it's bigger for Notre Dame because they're still undefeated, and they've proved nothing. They really haven't played very well so far. They're 3-0, but it's an unimpressive 3-0. This is a chance to beat a pretty good team and maybe get yourself playing on a higher level and get people to take you a little more seriously as a national playoff contender. The problem, Notre Dame's schedule, Dan, is tricky. It's not just the games, who they're playing, but when. They play so many teams coming off of bye weeks that they are at a bye disadvantage. This is one of them, and they're going to keep running into that. Cincinnati next week goes off of an open date into South Bend. And there are several others throughout the season. Just wear and tear and preparation time. Notre Dame's at a disadvantage five different times this season.
Most disappointing team so far is who?
Oh, boy. I would have to say, really, I'd say Ohio State. I thought that they were – I bought into the belief that they would plug and play with these young guys coming in and everything would just keep running smoothly. And not just that they lost at home to Oregon, but they were pretty well outplayed in that game. And then, to come back and be 21-20 against a Tulsa team that lost to an FCS team, I'm like, what is wrong there? There's just something that's not – clicking that I really didn't expect.
I would nominate Clemson, but yeah, maybe I overrated Clemson, but DJU has not been Trevor Lawrence 2.0. That offense, that surprises me a little bit. Are they still the ACC, but are they a top 10 team in your opinion?
No, they're not in my top 10 as of now. They're not. The grim struggle against Georgia Tech Saturday, well, that was really wild to see them struggle to score 14 and barely hold off Georgia Tech at home. So they've got issues. What they've got also is an easy schedule. They could end up being 11-1 and not be very good.
What happens if Lane Kiffin beats Nick Saban?
The earth splits open. And then, demons come out. I mean, now it would just be it would be incredibly interesting. I mean, Lane Kiffin is a provocateur. He's been an Eddie Haskell type for those old enough to know who that is. he's a guy that loves being a needler, a fly in the ointment. And this would be the ultimate, sticking it to the SEC establishment and to the guy that fired him as offensive coordinator in the middle of a playoff. They're going to have a chance, I think. I mean, they're a dangerous team. They're better defensively, and they're really good on offense.
Safe travels. It's always great to catch up with you again, Pat. Thank you.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
That's Pat Forte, Sports Illustrated. Do you guys see the story about the head coach at Portland State, Bruce Barney Barnum? If the FCS school doesn't give Barnum a car or credit card, they should now. Because last week on a Portland radio show, Barnum promised to buy beer for all the fans that came to the home opener against Western Oregon. So more than 2,000 free beers later, he had a tab, I think, around $15,000, $16,000. I'm going to guess Barnum doesn't make a lot of money at Portland State. That's not one of those that if Nick Saban said that, though he'd have to buy 80,000 beers there. But he bought more than 2,000 free beers. They dubbed the bar Barney's Beer Garden. They picked up a victory. Portland State, of course, Neil Lomax at Portland State, the Vikings. Let me see. This weekend, this in from Greg McElroy, former Alabama quarterback. This weekend, Alabama is going for 100 wins in a row over unranked opponents. That's the longest streak in modern history in college football. It's longer than the next three active streaks combined. Clemson has won 36 in a row against non-ranked teams. Notre Dame, 35. And you would win some money on the third one, Cincinnati, at 24. We'll take a break. Coming up, whose career would you want? More phone calls, and we'll check in Whistling Straits, Sheboygan, off the coast of Lake Michigan. Sheboygan.
It's a lively town.
Yeah, Sheboygan.
A polka hotbed.
Yeah, Sheboygan. right. That'll be coming up next hour. The Ryder Cup getting underway tomorrow. Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Sunday night, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers go to San Francisco to battle George Kittle and the 49ers Sunday, 7 Eastern, NBC, Peacock. A couple of phone calls, and then we have a whose career would you want? Andrew in North Dakota. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Good morning, gentlemen. Dan and the Danettes. Great show as always.
Thank you, Andrew.
I was going to call in with a trivia question. It's a good one, but before I do that, I got to address the poll question. There is one, I think, injury that trumps Drew Bledsoe's injury for the impact of the NFL, and that is back in the mid-70s, there was a superstar quarterback that never got to be a superstar by the name of Greg Cook.
Yeah, Cincinnati
Bengals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Paul Brown and Bill Walsh was the offensive coordinator, and his injury, I think it was Bobby Bell that sacked him outside the pocket, separated his right throwing shoulder. And from that injury, Bill Walsh literally had to create the West Coast offense. And to this day, there are versions of the West Coast offense still being run in the NFL. And I think that injury has more of an impact than just about any injury in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, Greg Cook was Rookie of the Year. He played at the University of Cincinnati, then went to the Bengals and showed great promise and got hurt. I did not know the aspect of Bill Walsh then creating the West Coast offense. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, you're right. Most people don't know this guy. In 1969, he led the league in yards per attempt, quarterback rating, and back when they didn't throw it a ton, but he was there's a good articles about how promising it was.
Yeah. Really, they looked at him as a potential superstar. Phil in Indiana joining us. Hi, Phil. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dan. Always a great pleasure. You were talking about the Hall of Fame. I found it interesting. I heard a reporter once talk about his criteria that he had a Hall of Fame vote. Now, it was in baseball, but he did say that one of the criteria, in addition to the numbers, was that that player had to be at least in the top three of their position at any given time during their career. And so if I look at Eli and Phillip Rivers, I don't know if I could say, and maybe you can, I wanted to get your thoughts, if either one of them would be considered in the top three of their craft at any given time during their career. Dan, always a pleasure. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Thank you, Phil. I don't think Eli was ever considered top three. You could probably find one or two years with Phillip Rivers, maybe, in the top three. But everybody has their own definition, their criteria for, and those that vote. And rightfully so. They give you parameters. It's like the Heisman. Nobody says, hey, you got to vote for that guy, or you can't vote for that guy, or he's got to play a certain position. It's open to interpretation. Same thing when I voted on the basketball MVP or Rookie of the Year. Nobody told you what you were supposed to factor in. It was just open to your interpretation. By the way, we're starting to get the stories that come out now that we had heard about during the preseason, prior to the preseason, I should say. Carolina was interested in Deshaun Watson and Matthew Stafford. Carolina thought they were getting Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford didn't want to go to Carolina, from what I'm told. But that story surfaced this week, and that Carolina was all in on trying to get Matthew Stafford, and that they held out hope for Deshaun Watson as well. Also, that the Niners did go after Tom Brady. That is true. No matter what is said, they did go after him before he went to Tampa. That Kyle Shanahan reached out to him. I don't know if Kyle Shanahan ended up apologizing to Matt LaFleur to say, hey, sorry that I went after your quarterback. And Matt LaFleur said, hey, no hard feelings here. But I don't know that don't know, that was somehow came up, and I was like, I don't know why that would be coming up. You have to apologize to Matt LaFleur. And big game tonight for Carolina against the Texans, and you got Sam Darnold. And that defense has been pretty incredible. All right, whose career would you want, Paulie?
Dan, this is from the same people who brought you. Whose stats would you want?
Whose stats would you want, huh? You can leave your stats behind. And if you've no stats, well, now you've got stats, and those stats are mine.
Any excuse to play one of those? I wish we had another one.
I totally screwed it up. It was Aaron Rodgers, the Niners. They were interested in Aaron Rodgers. My bad. The Niners were also interested in Tom Brady. That's why Kyle Shanahan apologized to Matt LaFleur. Duh.
Whose stats would you want? Tell me. Whose stats would you want?
Whose career would you want, Dan, and the group? Devin Hester's career, four-time Pro Bowler. He's likely going to the Hall of Fame. He's considered the greatest return man of all time, at least top three. He played in the Super Bowl and lost the Super Bowl, but did return a kick for a touchdown in a Super Bowl. Okay. Or Joe Flacco, no Pro Bowls. He is a Super Bowl champion and a Super Bowl MVP. He is likely not going to the Hall of Fame.
He's not going to the Hall of Fame.
Whose career would you want? Ooh, good pause.
I'm going to say Joe Flacco. You won the Super Bowl.
I'm surprised.
I wasn't finished, Todd. Super Bowl MVP at quarterback. Joe Flacco. Anything else, Todd?
I thought you were going to go with Hester. Hall of Fame, you got gold jacket. He got a chance to at least compete in the Super Bowl and had a big moment in the Super Bowl. Take the jacket over the ring, assuming he eventually does get in over Flacco. Hester was superb at what he did. Flacco was kind of a run-of-the-mill quarterback in the history of quarterback.
Seton?
Joe Flacco, though, has a ring and probably $130 million more dollars in the bank.
Well, we can't include money here.
We can't?
I don't think so.
Then I'm out of every one of these conversations, because that's essentially what it always comes down to for me is who made more money and did they win? Oh, okay. So they won and made more money? I'll be that guy.
Yeah, Seton's taking Warren Buffett's career over Tom Brady's.
Who wouldn't?
Would you want to be Warren? Okay, if I said you were Jeff Bezos or Tom Brady.
Well, I'd probably be Tom Brady.
Yeah, I would too.
Are looks included?
Well,
no offense.
I'm good with the way I look.
Money makes you look a whole lot better.
Well, then Bezos better keep earning. You better get back to work. Yeah.
Tom Brady's got a great head of hair. I'm keeping
that. I would be Tom Brady over Jeff Bezos.
Richest man in the world?
Yeah, I don't want to be the richest guy in the world.
I don't need that heat.
Like, I'd be top 100 richest guys. I'd be okay with that. But, like, Brady's got everything.
He's got good dough.
Yes, his wife's got good dough.
And nothing to worry about.
He doesn't need that.
And his wife adds to the funds. Yeah. Bezos' wife takes from the funds.
Ex-wife.
Yeah, Mrs. Brady's killing it.
Yeah.
Devin Hester's in a position that's not even going to exist anymore.
Basically. Yeah. What position do you play? You know, the guy who was down at the goal line and then watched the ball go over his head and then there was a touchback? That was me. Oh, you know, my grandfather told me about those guys. Man, it's been a long time since we've seen those guys. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, Brady and Giselle couldn't spend their money in 50 lifetimes.
No, are you taking Joe Flacco or Devin
Flacco.
Hester?
What if you downgraded to Nick Foles versus Devin Hester? Then it's even tougher to bait.
Nick Foles
is like Joe Flacco light.
Against the grain, five good reasons why you need to watch tonight's Panthers Texans. McLovin actually came up with five great good reasons. Final hour coming up. One more item. We close out hour two, and what an hour it was. Go to rockauto.com. All the parts your car, truck, whatever need. Rockauto.com. Family business. This was founded by automotive engineers in 1999, and they thought, well, there's a hole in the market here. How about we do something where we have two goals in mind, giving you direct access to all the information hidden in the computers and catalogs behind the parts store counter. And second, making the parts affordable, offering reliably low prices. They've done both. RockAuto.com has a lot of the parts you've been told no longer available, dealer only. But also, they give you a choice of brands and prices and features. If you're looking for a particular battery, you're going to be able to find that at rockauto.com. And they deliver it right to your door. Why waste time and money hunting for these parts? Phoning, driving, waiting in lines? Nobody wants to do that. rockauto.com. And make sure you tell them we sent you. Write Dan Patrick in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you and you listen to the program. All the parts your car or truck will ever need, rockauto.com.